Hi, I'm Rajesh Bhargave, Associate Professor of Marketing at Imperial College Business School. This is Business to Human, the podcast where we explore human stories of striving in business and entrepreneurship.
Between the businesses that fail and the top 1% that are just like the entrepreneurs that are kind of making it but kind of not, sits most people who are doing something entrepreneurial. You don't really hear the story in the middle, and their story isn't told, which means they think, or at least I did when I was there, that, oh, well, I'm not a super success story, but also I haven't failed, therefore I must be doing something wrong.
For our first episode, it's my pleasure to speak with Eric Fulweiler. Eric is the founder of Rival, a marketing innovation consultancy that launched in late 2021. He's also the host of the podcast Scratch, about rethinking marketing with the challenger mindset. Now, earlier in the academic year, Eric spoke with our MSc Strategic Marketing students about building a media company around a brand. Eric also spoke about making business-to-business marketing more engaging, and I'm a huge supporter of Eric's approach. As a consumer behavior academic, it's always great to see customer centricity emphasized in domains outside of B2C marketing. I also wanted to speak with Eric about his productivity function, or if he's willing to use the term, life hacking. So personally, my diary is filled with many different responsibilities, including research, teaching, industry engagement, and I always find it a real struggle to keep my head above water. I'm sure our audience can also relate in their own ways. And as what we'll see in this episode, Eric has had a varied and extremely productive career, and he's also spinning many plates to build out Rival, and I'm keen to explore how he manages it all. So Eric, thank you for taking the time to join us today. Maybe just to get a little slice of your life, how have you spent your day?
Oh man. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's great to hang out with you as always, and I'm really excited for this conversation. It sounds like a lot to pack into 45 minutes, but I can talk quickly when I'm well caffeinated, so I'm sure we'll cover a lot of ground. I am excited to talk about the life hacking stuff. I think it kind of gets a bad rap when it gets that name, you know, because it's all about, I guess it's all about productivity, but I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to constantly be better at what you're doing. And really the only resource, like the most important resource and the scarcest resource we have, and what do they say about it? Like you can't create more of it, is time. So why not try to kind of make the most out of it? And it's a constant learning journey of trying to get better at it. So sometimes, and my wife would certainly say that I'm maybe a little bit too focused on trying to squeeze every minute out of every day, but I'm happy to talk about that. So to answer your question, I mean, my day, you know, I am an early riser. It's just kind of how I think I'm wired naturally. So I get up pretty early. We also have an employee in Hong Kong. So I like to say hi to her early on. And I get some work done, go to the gym, come back. I tend to have some downtime in the morning because that's when I'm most productive. And so on the life hack thing, that's some advice that I give to people listening is you got to know yourself. And whenever you are at your most productive, you should be doing the things that are most important. So I don't take meetings, I don't take calls for the first couple hours of the day. And I'm just in the strategy, in client delivery, in new business, in whatever it is that's the most important thing of the day. And then afternoon is meetings back to back from 12 to 6. And today, you know, in today's world, that's mostly at home. But sometimes I get the pleasure of coming out, having a little bit of an adventure in the real world and coming to a podcast studio at Imperial College.
Thanks for sharing that, Eric. I think we want to dig in a little bit more also in your day-to-day later in this chat. But I want to start first with Rival. If you could just tell us what Rival is, how is it different from other marketing consultancies? And then we'll talk a little bit later about the founding of Rival and how it actually went about it.
Yeah. So Rival is a marketing consultancy that helps businesses develop strategies and capabilities to grow faster. So another way of thinking of it is we're a management consulting firm for CMOs. So we do research, strategy, and training around all areas of growth within the marketing function. So what that typically looks like is, and where our work tends to focus, is in three areas: brand. So everything from the development of a new brand. We're doing a project right now for a big client in the financial services world that's branding a new proposition that they're taking to market. So what is the name of this thing and how does it actually come to life? And then there's go-to-market. So that is, how do you actually deliver the business results you're looking for through marketing? Because at the end of the day, the role of marketing is to drive growth of the business. And so you need to figure out the strategies and tactics of how you use content, performance marketing, PR, influencer, your website, sales collateral, anything that goes into, all right, how do you actually do marketing to get the results that you're looking for? We help develop strategy on that. And then the third bucket, which is probably the one I'm most passionate about, is culture and capability building. Because at the end of the day, the best strategy, the newest technology doesn't mean anything. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, so I'll just say anything. If you don't have the right people on board set up in the right way to be able to execute on it. So that's kind of the red thread through everything that we do. And to your point of what makes us different, I think that's part of it. Like, we're really focused on the people side of things and the work that we do. And then some other things, you know, for a consulting business, a services business, a lot of it depends on the quality of the people that you have. So I've been lucky enough now, 15 years in advertising, marketing, startups, big brands, I've come across some pretty smart people. And so when I decided to set this up, I kind of made a list of those people and looked them up and said, hey, are you interested in getting involved? And so I think we're building a pretty compelling team of really smart marketers. But we're also trying to differentiate, like I said, in how we work, in the focus on the people, in the type of work that we do. So we're very focused on taking startup, entrepreneurial, challenger marketing mindsets, models, strategies into more established businesses. So that's a bit of a differentiator as well. And then we're also, you know, we're starting with consulting because it's easy, fast, and, you know, relatively cheap. It doesn't take a lot of capital to start a consulting business. So we're getting going with that. But actually, we have a product roadmap of tools, platforms, technology that we want to build that all is about helping any business grow like a challenger. That's kind of the first principle for us, is we believe you see these challenger brands, these hyper growth businesses growing so much faster than the incumbents they're challenging. And we really believe there is something about that, that any business, if you can distill down what they're doing when it comes to culture, when it comes to strategy, when it comes to go to market, you can take that into any business. And in theory, they should be able to drive the same level of growth. So that's what Rival's all about. That's why it's called Rival. Every business can be a challenger. And so we're trying to understand what is it about these hyper growth businesses that allows them to grow the way they do, and bring that into any company that wants to grow at the same rate.
It's a really fascinating challenge. And just to double click on one part of that, which is, you said that over 15 years, you've had to develop this capability, the domain knowledge and the connections. So I want to expand on that, Eric, and find out more about your journey, particularly more on the human side of how do you personally get to that point where you can start something like Rival. So let's explore that journey a little bit more. Like me, you are from the other side of the pond, from a city that rhymes with my city. I'm from Austin, and Eric is from Boston. So growing up in Boston, did you have a similar entrepreneurial spirit? Did you do lemonade stands? Did you do any kind of initial foray into entrepreneurship?
You know what? I had my odd lemonade stands, but I was not, you know, I'm sure we'll get there, but I worked for a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk for a long time. And he is, well, he calls himself a thoroughbred entrepreneur. And he has these stories about when he was 6 years old or whatever, all these businesses that he was building as a kid in New Jersey. That was not really me. Like, I did it, I guess, a little bit, but I was really into sports. I was really into music. I kind of, I don't know, think did normal things. Both my parents are doctors. And so there was a large kind of bend in the family towards academia. But I don't know. I just never really liked school. So I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I never sat down, and for the students that are listening, and I know we talked about this when I came in and gave the talk in your class, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Like, I'm kind of figuring it out as I go along. But I think that if you know yourself, if you focus on doing things that you enjoy, doing them with people that you enjoy them, like, then you don't really feel like you're working. And so I like what I do because I like the challenge of building something from nothing. I like the challenge of how do you get people to believe in something, to do something differently, whether that's coming on board and joining Rival or a client that we're working with and a strategy that we want them to adopt. But I wouldn't say that like marketing was my calling or anything like that. And I just kind of, you know, in terms of the rest of my story, which I'm guessing we'll get into, I kind of fell into it. And now 15 years later, this is what I do. But yeah, I don't really have a good way of wrapping that up. But there's not kind of like a red thread throughout my whole life that was like, I was always going to be here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I think from your history, I know that you've been inspired a lot by Gary Vee.
Yeah.
And he, of course, has a phenomenal and highly influential podcast himself and a lot of media content. Many of our students know that it is important to have those kinds of mentors and how they can inspire them. So what I'd like to know more from you, Eric, is how did you build that connection? And how did you, in those initial days when you're working for VaynerMedia, how did you build the confidence to be able to work directly with Gary Vee and to gain his trust? This is a challenge that many of our students struggle with. You are unsure of yourself. There's a lot of imposter syndrome when you're, especially when you're starting off in your career. So maybe you can speak to that. How did you manage that in the early part of your career?
So my answer is going to go in a direction which maybe some people will think is off topic, but I really believe in it. It's at the root of, I don't know, why I guess I'm happy with my life. I don't know if that's the right way to tee it up, but hear me out. I really believe that everything ultimately comes down to perspective and self-awareness. Perspective gives you gratitude on what you have, and self-awareness gives you the confidence to know what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I think, you know, probably there's few people listening that would disagree with that, but the step further that I want to take it is I think those are skills that you can work on. You can work on having a stronger perspective and being more grateful for what's in your life. You can work on having the self-awareness to become more confident. So, you know, everybody has the hand that they're dealt in terms of nature. And then everybody also kind of has the hand they're dealt in terms of nurture, but you can control that one at least a little bit more. But I think those two things, if you agree with me in part or agree with me in full, gratitude and confidence is a lot of what it comes down to. And so for me, I think I probably had a decent amount of both of those just in my nature. But there are things that I like intentionally, consistently work on like every day. I think about those things and I try to be better about them. And I still have so far to go. But it's a journey. I think in terms of Gary, I mean, I don't know, like I know him. It's unbelievable for the people that do know him. And if you don't, press pause on this and just go Google him real quick. Mm-hmm. Gary Vee, that's V-E-E. It's unbelievable, his world now, because when I met him, he was the wine guy. He had this YouTube show and this liquor store in New Jersey. And I met him because I was the social media guy, and I'm using air quotes for people listening. I was the social media guy at Forbes.com back when the .com business was in a separate building, and it was like the second class citizen to the magazine down the street on Fifth Avenue, and they needed somebody to figure out this social media thing. And so I went in and kind of started to figure it out, and there was this whole culture and community building around Web 2.0 in New York and San Francisco, which kind of became social media, digital media. And that's where I crossed paths with Gary. And like I said, he was doing the wine thing and he's like, I'm going to start this agency. I need some people to come help build it for me. And so I got involved like really on the ground floor. The whole company was 15 people when I started, and now it's 1500 people globally, which is insane. So I think it's one of those things, like, I guess you could consider him somewhat of a celebrity, but people who kind of know celebrities before they were celebrities, it's a bit of a different thing. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't like I need to be confident to work with this guy. I was just a guy that I've now known for, 12 years, 13 years, something like that. But I think what I would go back to, and probably more what you're getting at for the people listening, is I really think that confidence is something that you can work on and get better at.
And on the gratitude side, was that something that you had been reading about over years, gratitude journal, or what is your mechanism for gaining that sense of perspective?
It is a lot of reading, a lot of writing is a tactic that really works well for me. Probably takes the place of a therapist in my life, just kind of trying to get my thoughts out there. My dad is a MD, PhD PhD in psychology, so probably have a little bit of that that's rubbing off on me. And I think it's probably just who I am. Like, I'm very much an introvert. I am very kind of reflective. Like, I try to work on myself. I sit down and try to like work on the things that I'm trying to work through in my head. And that's my system. You know, everybody I think has their system for trying to figure themselves out. And that's certainly a lifelong journey. But that's kind of how I do it, is just, you know, I really believe that what gets prioritized gets done. So if you say that something's important enough and you keep it as a priority in your life, then you're going to make progress on it no matter what it is.
So Eric, you were at VaynerMedia for a number of years and then 11FS as well. What was that transition like? How did you, I know you also worked in between other organizations, but throughout, how did you make the decision to go from one position to another, from one type of sector to another? I know you went to financial services with 11FS. What was your thinking throughout this?
I wish it was more intentional than it was. And obviously, you know, you can go back in the past and reverse engineer a reason that you did things. But I mean, I guess, again, for the students listening, people just kind of starting to build their career, if I could do it over again, or if I could give myself advice back to when I was 22, I kind of wish I'd been a little bit more patient. And maybe this all gets wrapped up in the confidence thing. And maybe I had a little bit too much of it back then. Who knows? But I think I was kind of like always itching to get to the next level. And it's like, oh, I haven't been promoted in a year, or I haven't been promoted in 2 years. Like, what's the next thing? Do I need to move companies to kind of get there? And I think, you know, good things come to those who wait. There's always a lot of truth in old sayings and expressions. And I think a career is long, like 50 years, 40 years, 30 years, whatever it is. If you zoom out and take the perspective of where can I learn the most? Where can I be around people that are going to teach me the most, that are going to give me the most exposure? Like, that's really what it comes down to. And so I moved around a decent amount. I went from VaynerMedia to another big agency, back to VaynerMedia to open their office here in London in 2015, which is what moved me over. And then into the fintech world and now onto my own thing. And yeah, I think that was kind of part of it, is I was always itching to kind of get to the next level, the next paycheck, the next title, whatever it was. And I wish I'd been a little bit more patient. The move from advertising to fintech was, I'd done 10 years in the ad agency world and was ready to do something else. Also, from a personal perspective, you know, my family, we're pretty rooted here in London now, and everything with Gary, all roads lead back to New York, and we didn't want to do that. So we were looking for an industry to get into, a company to get into that would be based here in London. So that's how I ended up going to 11FS. And then with Rival, you know, it actually wasn't the intention or the first idea to start my own company. It was, I was looking for something else to do. I didn't find it. I thought maybe I have enough experience, and to my point earlier, know enough good people that I can maybe piece together a team. And I thought I'd give it a shot. And that's kind of still where it's at. Like, the more I get into it, the more confident and optimistic I am that we can really build something with this. But I don't know. And especially when it's an early stage business, you know, one contract goes one way, a new hire goes the other, and like, new businesses are very, very fragile. So I don't really know. You know, my wife and I, like our family, we kind of said, all right, I'm going to give it a shot, in large part because I think I would regret it if I didn't. And I think there's only so many windows to do something like this at this stage in my career. I kind of thought this is as good a time as any. But we kind of said, I'm going to give it 2 years, like highest gear, true entrepreneurial grind, and then see how we feel. And maybe it'll be great and we'll keep going like that. Or maybe it'll be something that kind of levels out and maybe isn't trying to build a massive company. Or maybe it'll be time to go do something else. I really don't know.
So Eric, I would love to unfold the story about Rival a bit more, especially the initial founding of it. And how did you make that decision? So I know you said you kind of towards the end there just had this urge. You wanted to start something. But how long were you thinking about starting a new venture, and did you struggle with the decision?
I still struggle with the decision. Yeah, I definitely did. I think one of the reasons, I've always been in startups, but this is the first time that I've started something of my own. And I think part of that is you need a very healthy risk appetite to be an entrepreneur, especially when it's like three kids, a mortgage, you know, you have a, I guess, a reputation that you're kind of putting on the line as well. And I'm not, I question whether I have the risk appetite to kind of really be a, I don't know, super successful entrepreneur or whatever. I'm much more of like an operator. And so I knew the early stage would be tough. I'm much more of like a, hey, let's take this thing from one to 10 rather than here's a blank sheet of paper, create something from zero to one. So I struggled with it. I thought about it for months, like a long, long time. And finally, like I said, kind of decided, well, one, I think I'll regret it if I don't. And two, we kind of realized, and I keep saying we, like my wife and I, because of course, you know, I have so much support from her and my family to be able to go do this, to put the time into it, to take the financial risk. So it's never just I making these decisions. But we kind of decided that the worst case scenario probably wasn't that bad. Like I'm lucky enough and feel like I've worked hard enough and know enough people that if I needed to string together some consulting projects just on my own, could probably do that. You know, family's not going to starve, mortgage is going to get paid, that type of thing. So we kind of realized like, give it a shot. The floor is not all that low, and then kind of see what happens. But as I think you can probably tell by now, I think about things a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't have kind of like the immediate gut reaction answer all the time. So it was a, you know, it was a few months of kind of easing myself into it. And when I decided to go do it, my wife turned to me and she said, "You're the last person to realize that you'd start your own business."
And then in the end, how did you decide, I'm just going to go for it? Did it, was there a day that you remember where you thought, this is it, I'm taking the dive?
Not really, actually. And I'm surprised because I thought it'd be one of those memories that was like really imprinted on me. I remember the day I set up the company, like the legal entity, which, by the way, as an American, I did that wrong. Oh, man, the tax implications. I should have set it up in the U.S. Anyway, that's probably why it's imprinted in my memory, all the headaches and legal bills now. But no, I think it was kind of like a series of conversations easing me into it. You know, there wasn't like a light bulb moment where I'm like, this is it. So, yeah, I wish I had an answer that was better for podcast listeners, but that's the reality.
And just, know, a lot of our students are interested in starting their own venture. And what they're often curious about, Eric, is the initial part of it, the months leading up to the actual launch. What kind of work did you have to do before pressing go and saying, this is now launched?
Yeah. So let me put out a couple points of context because there's some stuff I want to get into that I know is going to be a lot of the conversation today, but I want to make sure people have the context before I kind of give you my point of view on it. So first of all, everybody's different. And so, and also everybody's got an opinion. So what I say comes from who I am and it's my opinion. And that does not mean that it is right for you. And then the other thing is, I think a lot of it, you know, like I was saying before, on self-awareness, a lot of that comes back to knowing who you are. Like I kind of knew what it would take for me to start a business or at least do it in the way that I would want to. And I knew what some of those challenges would be. I knew some of the things I think I would do well, some of the things that I wouldn't do well. So I think a lot of it comes down to like, this is my story, if you will, but it certainly isn't relevant to everybody. So the early days was tough, man. It was tough. And I've been trying to talk more about this because I don't think it gets talked about enough. You know, on the one hand, everybody knows the stats of like whatever percentage of new businesses fail, 80%, 90%, like the vast majority of new businesses fail. Cool. And then on the other side, you kind of see the Gary V's of the world of like these super successful, glamorous entrepreneurs, but you don't really hear the story in the middle. And kind of the people that aren't the Gary V's, that aren't the top 1%, that are just like the entrepreneurs that are kind of making it, but kind of not. And that's because it's not sexy to talk about. It's not fun. You know, there's a whole other side to this that is really challenging, or at least it has been for me. And I think it's important to talk about because there's so many people out there. That is the vast majority of people. Between the businesses that fail and the Gary V's sits most people who are doing something entrepreneurial. And their story isn't told, which means they think, or at least I did when I was there, that, oh, well, I'm not a super success story, but also I haven't failed, therefore I must be doing something wrong. And I think people need to hear more that like, this is just kind of how it is. Like entrepreneurial life is hard. It's lonely. It's tough. you make so many mistakes. Oh my God. So many mistakes. You put in so much time to things that end up being the wrong thing to do that you have to throw away and start over again. A conversation you think is going to take 3 days ends up taking 3 months. That deal that you thought was going to happen all of a sudden falls away, but then another one comes up. Like, it's a roller coaster, literally day to day, week to week. It's what, January 25th? I swear to God, we're 3 months into this year with how much has just happened in my world and in my head. So to answer your question more specifically, the early days was a lot of time. And that is in part because I know myself. I know I'm not the smartest. I am not the most naturally talented entrepreneur, but I know I just have an ability to like work really hard. And I've just always been able to do that, like in everything that I do. And so I do think you should work both smart and hard, but one of those is easier to control than the other. And so I put in a lot of time. You know, I work 6 days a week. I'm definitely taking some time away from my family. But like I said, we made that decision. I try to optimize every minute of the day, like we kind of talked about earlier. And so I just kind of threw myself at it. And it was thinking, it was a lot of talking to people, getting input from, you know, to your point about mentors. I think everybody's looking for kind of mentors, capital M. Who's that person that I talk to every month that gives me career advice or guidance? I think people should be looking for lowercase m mentors, of like, who are smart people you know that you can just be like, hey, I'm thinking about this, what do you think? Or have you ever come across something like this? I'd love your thoughts on it. I did a lot of that. I just emailed a bunch of people I knew, called them up, said, I'm thinking about doing this thing. Can I get input? So it was a lot of just context gathering and people who had been there before or had interesting perspectives, just kind of trying to pull it all in and start to shape up what the offering and what the business of Rival ended up being. But yeah, it was not easy. It was kind of me on my own trying to work it out. And eventually you get there and it's much easier to kind of talk about the wins and the shiny parts of like, we have the brand and we have the website, and we have clients, we have a team and all that stuff now. But there, that's the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of stuff that's below the surface.
And Eric, on that, what were the biggest decisions that you struggled with when you were launching, whether it's the brand, the positioning?
I can't remember because I probably blocked it out. And if I did remember, I'd be too embarrassed to say. The amount of time that I spent to try to figure out the name of the company, oh my God. That is like a big portion of my life that I'm never going to get back. I'm not a creative person. And so the original name of the company, I can't even say it right now. It was so bad. It was like what it was going to be, until luckily some more creative, you know, smarter people than I came in and were like, hey, you should think about this. You should think about doing something different. So that was a big one. What was the name of the company? The offering. You know, what are we actually going to do? How do we try to do it differently? The people side of it, a business like this at the end of the day is clients who are going to buy your services and people who are going to deliver the work. And so, you know, there's kind of new business. How do you go out there and find people that are looking for what you're selling? And then there's the team side. And actually the team side I find much harder, but also much more important. So there's a lot of time spent on both those fronts too. And then the other bucket, as you know from the talk I gave to your class, and I talk about this a lot publicly, you know, I believe in this model, this modern marketing model of building a media company around your brand. So thinking about the audience you're trying to reach, how do you produce content and experiences that are going to add value to them? And so that's what we're doing with Rival. And again, it was just me. And so I wrote a ton of LinkedIn content. I wrote a ton of email newsletters. I wrote like 6 white papers. We geared up the podcast. So it was a lot of time put into content and kind of the early pieces of what is going to be this media company for Challenger Marketing.
So Eric, that's sounds like a really tough time, early days. And now you've passed, at least gotten to that point where you've hit launch. But it's still early days, right? It's still the early part of Rival's journey. And I'd love to hear more about what are you working on now? Now that Rival has launched, what does your typical week look like as an entrepreneur these days?
I have an idea. So on my notes, and I'm pulling up my phone, I have my priorities for the week. Why don't I just run you through those?
Sure, yes.
And I just have to figure out what I can and can't say. All right, so I bucket my week into a few different things. Revenue, and that is always first. And the way I think about that is revenue is like oxygen. So it's not why you exist, but you need it to survive. So we need to make sure that we're breathing every day. Otherwise, nothing else matters. So revenue is the first bucket. So in that, again, I can't share all of this, but basically there's some scopes of work that we need to get signed from clients. There's some new opportunities that are kind of at late stage that we're just trying to pin down. As you know, we're building this new intelligence and advisory platform. And so I'm talking to some people about potentially buying subscriptions to that. We have all the content that we do, and so we're looking for new sponsors for the podcast, the newsletter, and maybe some of our thought leadership dinners in Q2. I am starting to travel again in February, so I'm going to Zurich, New York, Dubai, and probably Dublin. So I'm starting to line up some meetings for that, which I put into the revenue bucket. So that's revenue. Delivery, so client work that we have a handful of clients, I can't share all the names, that we have projects in flight for. So it's things like status meetings. We're presenting to the board for one of these clients later this week. We're briefing a vendor to develop a video for one of these clients. We have to name one of these products. We're onboarding a new person. We are in the second sprint of research for the intelligence and advisory platform. So that's part of the delivery. So that's the delivery bucket. The media bucket, so we're launching our first white paper this week. We are announcing our virtual event series. We have two CMO dinners in February and March that I'm sending invites to. We have the podcast that goes out every Wednesday, the newsletter that goes out every Monday. We have a new writer who's going to be writing a bunch of articles for our content hub. We're onboarding a PR consultant to work with us. We're looking to hire a producer. This is now the team bucket. We have a new advisor that I'm onboarding. We are going to be sharing our employee handbook publicly because I think people are interested in that. We have our monthly team check-in on Monday that I got to write a deck for. And then I have a bucket that's biz ops. We're setting up a US entity. There's a lot of complications, like I mentioned, around that. That's taken up a lot of my time. We need an operations provider in the US. We need health insurance for employees in the US. And I have to redo the 2022 P&L now that we have actuals for January. So that is my week.
Wow. So Eric, do you find any time to sleep or how do you get to this level?
You know, I actually sleep a good amount. And, you know, I don't function well if I get less than 6 hours of sleep. So I try to get between 7 and 8. And, you know, my life is basically my family, work, and working out. And so actually the working out helps me to maintain the sleep, because if I didn't sleep well, then I couldn't work out well. So I sleep, like I said, I get up early and I go to bed early. So most of my work happens between kind of 5 a.m. and 6 p.m. if I'm not working late that night. And then one or two nights a week, I'll work late and that'll go until like 7 or 8. But I don't like put in crazy nighttime hours just because sleep is really important to me. And also my brain is no good after like 8 or 9 p.m. anyway.
So it sounds like a theme here is it's not just about time, but focus. Focused work.
It's everything.
And that mental energy to get your work done.
Yeah. And again, a lot of that comes down to knowing yourself, knowing how much sleep you need, knowing what kind of diet you need, knowing those things that are going to help you, and also knowing when you're most productive and prioritizing the most important things in that time period. I know at 4 o'clock today, my mind is not going to be going at the same RPMs as it was at 9 o'clock when I just come back from the gym. I had a cup of coffee. And so 9 o'clock is when I'm going to write the client deck, or it's when I'm going to, you know, build the strategy for how we're launching this product or those kind of heavy hitting things. So again, like I said, work smart, work hard. You can control the work hard part a lot more because you can just put in more hours. But the smart piece, that's a constant optimization.
So Eric, I'd love to hear, what have you discovered about yourself in terms of what makes you productive? So I'm going to rattle off a few different areas and see how you now think about this in your own life. So one, caffeine.
I love it. All of it. I probably drink way too much of it.
So exercise, we've already talked about. Sleep, we've already talked about. What about food? What kinds of food have you learned about yourself that makes you at your best?
So my food is very tied up in my working out. So I kind of eat to workout, essentially. Like, it's a very functional thing for me. But I have found, and I don't know if this is really interesting to people, but I tend to either not eat lunch or eat a very light lunch, because if I eat lunch, then I get a bit of a dip energy-wise in the afternoon.
What about mindfulness, Eric? Do you have a practice for mindfulness?
I do. So I meditate 6 days a week. So just 10 minutes in the morning. That's it. I use Headspace now, which is fine. It's more just like a, I guess, hack to make sure that I do it consistently, because there's like a different episode or whatever they call it every day. So that's it. And to be honest with you, I can't really tell if it makes a difference, but I think of it kind of like the gym. It's like, you know, it's not about how you feel or the differences that you try to see every day. It's like, if you do it consistently over time, it will help you. And I just really believe, and again, a lot of this comes from my dad, we know so little about how our brains work. And I do believe that kind of, again, focus and intentionally working on trying to, I guess, connect with yourself, trying to calm yourself down, trying to just like get in touch with how your brain works. I think that's 10 minutes that's well spent every day.
And then from that, from the mindfulness throughout the day, in what kind of timeline do you work? Do you work in bursts, 20 minutes? Do you work focus for an hour?
I'm going to show you my calendar. I'm just going to pull this up. Hopefully this is interesting to people. So I get up at 5. I drink a lot of coffee, and that is actually probably my most productive time, like 5 to 7. 7 is when I go to the gym. And then when I'm back from the gym, 9 to 11, and 11 is when I start meetings. Those two-hour blocks are the most productive. I call it downtime. Today we had our sales meeting at 6:30 because, again, we have a senior consultant in Hong Kong. But then it's basically, you know, we have our daily stand up at 9:30, but it's basically downtime from 5 to 11. But again, the gym is an hour in the middle. And then from 12 until 6:30 tonight, it's 30 minute meeting, hour meeting, this podcast call on the way back home, up until 6:30. So I think I probably got that from Gary. You know, he towards the end, and probably still doing this now, he would even do 5 minute meetings, which I haven't pushed myself to that level. I have done a few 15 minute meetings sometimes, but yeah, it's like, just try to get as much in as you can. I mean, make sure you're doing it well, but I don't kind of, and again, this is just me. Like, I don't take the hour for lunch. I don't kind of like put time around my meetings. I'm just trying to get through as much as possible during the day. And I actually find that that gives me more energy than having too many gaps, especially in the afternoon.
So you prefer to schedule out your day more with...
Fully stacked. Yep. Yep.
And any other productivity or life hacks? I know we've covered a lot of ground here, but everyone has their own secret sauce that they've discovered maybe over time, that until I started implementing this in my life, I didn't realize how much better it could be. So for me, for example, I like to use an actual timer. If I'm doing writing work, I have a hourglass sand timer.
Yeah.
Wait for that, and then I just work that long. What is your hack?
I'm trying to think if I have good hacks to share. I might, and one or two might come to me, but my big thing is I don't really think it's about hacks. So I'm going to relate this to the gym, right? And I think anything kind of like physical fitness or physical skill, people can relate to. It doesn't have to be going to the gym. You know, there is a multi-billion dollar industry built on trying to sell people hacks. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, you got to do the little things consistently well over time. And then you'll be able to change. You'll be able to change things. And so I think that's the same with anything meaningful. So hacks might help you. They might help you optimize something a little bit, or, you know, I'm a big fan of James Clear, Atomic Habits, fantastic book. It really is about building habits. I think that's so much more important. So the thing, and it's harder to grasp, and you can't be like, oh, I'm going to go do that tomorrow. You really need to sit down and spend time on it. But I think the self-awareness, know when you're most productive, prioritize your day around that. I think the one thing that I can give people that maybe is a little bit more bite-sized or easy to implement is having a system for your to-do list and actually staying disciplined with it is probably the most important tool that I have, beyond all the kind of self-awareness, program my day, all that other stuff that I was talking about. So my system for that is I've got like where I didn't show you, but I read it off earlier. So I think in day, week, month, quarter, year increments, right? And so every week I'll write the priorities for the week. Every month I'll write the priorities for the month, every quarter, et cetera, et cetera. And then every day you go in and you write the priorities for the day. And so I literally every day have here are the 5 to 7 things I need to do today. And those come from my week priorities, which come from my month priorities, which come from my quarter priorities. So really, ultimately, you have your priorities for the year, if you can get that far. Quarter is also fine. That should be laddering down into literally a list on your phone, on your computer, on your notebook that says, here are the 5 to 7 things to do every day. Now, the hard part is actually sticking to them and not finishing the day or, you know, trying as much as possible to not get distracted away from those 5 to 7 things. Prioritization is hard, but the execution of it and staying disciplined with it is the hardest thing. But that's where the difference is. And so, you know, there are some hacks, timers, whatever that system is, where it's like you work in 20-minute bursts and then take 10 minutes off. I don't experiment with that stuff too much, and maybe I should, but I really think it comes down to kind of prioritization and then the discipline to know what those things are and then just make sure you go get them done.
In a way, the most important thing is essentially knowing what you're really passionate about and putting that as the top line and structuring your life around that, at least your work life. And it sounds like what you've done with launching your own venture is you have that goal for these 2 years. You want to pursue it intensely, and it has lots of different dimensions. But you have those priorities in place, and then that allows you to do the day-to-day much better. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to be productive if you don't know what you want to achieve.
Yep, totally.
So Eric, our students, of course, are learning lots of different frameworks, reading lots of books, and getting access to lots of media. And what I'd like to finish off with is your advice, anything you'd like students to read, listen to, watch, that you think would transform their careers, either in entrepreneurship, in marketing, or just in any direction, however they take their careers?
I think there's maybe some obvious or expected answers of like books to read or podcasts to listen to, stuff like that. And I will throw one of those out there. I really think that, I can't remember if this was before we press record or after, but we were talking about being customer centric. The best business book I can recommend, and it's also the best marketing book, even though it's more focused on product innovation, is Competing Against Luck by Clayton Christensen. And so it's basically the book that kind of presented this idea, and you've probably heard it before, of people don't want a quarter inch drill, they want a quarter inch hole in the wall. People buy products and services and brands because of the job that it does in their life. And I think if you can make that switch, if you can understand in whatever your business is and whatever your job is as a professional, that people don't care about what you're selling them, they care about what it's doing for them, such a profound shift. So I always recommend that as kind of the first, one of the most important business books, at least for me. The other answers that I give probably aren't as expected, but they've really helped me, and they're a bit all over the place, but you know, since you've heard me talk almost nonstop for 45 minutes, it probably makes sense now. So the first is I would strongly encourage, I do this exercise, I try to do it once a year, but it's kind of fallen off recently. Sit down and try to write your life in 5 years. Just write a day in the life. Where do you wake up? What do you do? What's your job? Who are you with? How do you spend your time? I just find that kind of helps you zoom out and be like, okay, am I on the path that I want to be on? And so, like I said, I used to do that consistently, and then you kind of see how things are stacking up. But I think we spend so much time, I mean, even this conversation or how I'm thinking about my day, it's like, what's the next meeting? What's the next week? And you got to put things in perspective. To what I was saying earlier of I kind of wish I had been more patient. The broader your perspective, the more long-term oriented you can be, and therefore the more aligned you're going to be to what you actually care about. So I think that's a really good exercise that I would encourage people to do. So the other thing that I'd really encourage people to do, and this can be at any stage of your career, but especially if you're starting out, I wish I had done this 15 years ago. Who you know is just as important as what you're able to do. And, you know, I remember, I don't know if somebody told me that or I just kind of realized it and I was like, that's bull. Like, it should just be about how good you are and how smart you are and how much you can do. It's just not how the world works, at least not the world of business. So I think that everybody should be as intentional with who they know as the skill set and experience they develop. And really what I mean by that is I think people listening should find some way to keep track of the people that they meet. So call it a personal CRM. For me, that's literally just a spreadsheet. And so when I meet people, I put their name in the spreadsheet. Maybe I put a note about how I met them, where I met them. And that's like thousands of people now. And so, you know, for perfect example, starting Rival, that's the first place that I went. Who do I know that I can look up that might have some input or ideas for me? So who you know matters just as much as what you do or what you're able to do. And I think you should be intentional with that. And you should find some way to have a personal CRM. I think a spreadsheet is as good a way as any. But I would highly, highly encourage, if you do one thing after listening to this podcast, I would really recommend that it be that or some version of that.
Just to wrap up, where can our audience find out more about Rival? And how can they get in touch with you?
So Rival is wearerival.com. I am on LinkedIn. And then you can also email me directly, eric@wearerival.com. That's Eric with a C.
Thanks, Eric. It was very authentic, very warm. That was the most important thing. We really found out more about you. Yeah. So that was Eric Fulweiler of Rival. As you heard in our conversation, Eric is a very passionate and very diligent entrepreneur. So Eric was very authentic, very open about his experiences as an entrepreneur and the struggles of that. So I really want to thank him again for opening up his life. And what I took away from that conversation is how much of a struggle it can be as an entrepreneur in the early days and how that requires a self-confidence that you must develop. And Eric walked us through some of the more practical ways in which he has developed his productivity, built up his social network so that he can succeed in this area, and built up his capabilities, his knowledge and his skills. So I thought that was very inspiring to see how Eric has approached this over a career that has spanned multiple different verticals and different kinds of roles. Eric also shared with us a number of practical tips, one about starting a business, including what he would have done differently, and how he thinks about marketing and positioning a company. And also just the day-to-day, the life hacks, how to manage your time, how to manage your health and your sleep. I hope that that's also inspirational for our students to think about. It's not that easy to succeed as an entrepreneur, but if you work hard at it, if you follow this kind of approach as what Eric has done, it's a challenge to be overcome. And there's also a lot of fun in it. You could hear that in Eric's voice, that he was enjoying the process despite how difficult it was. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time where we explore more human stories of striving in business and entrepreneurship. Thank you again to Imperial College Business School for supporting this podcast. We have a number of different podcasts as well in the business school. I encourage you to check those out. This podcast was recorded, engineered, and edited by Pronk Productions. For more information on Pronk, please visit pronkproductions.com. That's P-R-O-N-K productions.com.